At one point, he even said to the Ukrainians, look, if you let me take Bakhmut, if you just withdraw your forces and let me take it, I will reveal to you Russian military positions in Ukraine that you can then fire on.
Welcome to the Powers That Be Daily, Puck's podcast focused on the intersection of Wall Street, Washington, Silicon Valley, and Hollywood, and the players who run it all. I'm Ben Landy. It's Friday, May 19th. Today, I'm joined by Julia Yaffe to discuss the Russian mercenary leader who's been criticizing Putin in Ukraine and the speculation that he's become a threat to the Kremlin. And later on, a Senate confirmation scandal that could have a huge impact on the military. We'll discuss all that and more on today's episode of The Powers That Be.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Happy Friday, everyone. I'm Ben Landy, doing my best Peter Hamby impression while he's on his honeymoon. And I'm delighted to be here with Puck's own Julia Yaffe. Hey, Julia.
Hi.
Julia, I love that you show up for every Zoom meeting and podcast recording in front of this same incredibly photogenic, very scholarly bookcase backdrop here. This is for people who are listening and who can't visualize, this is exactly how Julia appears on television. She shows up to our podcast recordings too.
Well, it's just my office. Also, what listeners didn't see me do was a Vanna White gesturing to my bookshelf.
Well, meanwhile, I look like I'm in the world's least secure panic room here.
Yeah, it's all right. I'll send you some books.
Well, speaking of security, Julia, I wanted to have you on for a couple of reasons. But let's start with Ukraine, because there's been some very strange sort of developments in the war involving Yevgeny Prigozhin, the Putin frenemy who runs the Wagner Group. This is this mercenary army group that is fighting in Ukraine. Do you want to take a sort of stab at explaining what's going on between these two?
So for the last few months, actually at least half a year, if not longer, Prigozhin, who was known for a long time as Putin's chef and denied any involvement in the Wagner Group, but is now constantly down in Bakhmut on the front lines, shooting videos of himself near the battle lines, talking to his soldiers, many of whom are convicts, former convicts. And they have been the main force. Wagner has been the main force trying to take the city of Bakhmut. They've been trying to take it. Battles around there started in August, but really it heated up in the fall. And they still haven't been able to take it despite suffering tens of thousands of casualties, sometimes at astronomical rates. You know, I saw a Ukrainian official describe the Wagner tactics in Bakhmut as meat waves that they just send in.
Oh my God.
Wave after wave of basically shock troops, poorly armed shock troops against, you know, HIMARS, against heavy Ukrainian artillery.
And a lot of these men were taken from Russian prisons, right? They were basically given the option of staying in prison or joining Wagner.
Yes. And some of them were given the option. I mean, there was a amazing but horrific article in the New York Times a few months ago by the incredible Andrew Kramer about how a lot of these prisoners are HIV positive, which is rampant in Russian prisons. And Wagner gave them the opportunity of rotting in jail and dying in jail, literally, or having a shot at getting these medications by joining Wagner. But if you look at the battle for Bakhmut, these waves of meat being sent at the Ukrainian lines, I mean, they've been decimated. And Prigozhin has been publicly, I mean, he's been slagging Gerasimov, who is in charge of the war, and Defense Minister Shoigu for not providing him sufficient artillery and ammunition, saying that basically you are the reason that these people are dying. And a couple weeks ago, he posted a video that was just incredibly graphic, where he's standing there in the dark, the camera's light is on, and it's lighting up what's behind him, which is a field full of bodies. And he's saying, these are people's sons, they're people's fathers, and they're all dying in droves because of you, Gerasimov, and you, Shoigu, because you won't give us the ammunition we need. And that was a very cleaned up version of what he said, because he, you know, called them bitches and faggots and just used insane language. He then threatened to withdraw his forces from Bakhmut by May 10th, so the day after Victory Day, if he didn't get the artillery he was demanding. He also put out a video slamming somebody he didn't name, but called him grandpa, dedushka, which in Russian society is generally code for Putin. People call him dedushka v bunkere, which is bunker grandpa, grandpa hiding in the bunker, right? And he just went off on this grandpa and said that history could either vindicate this grandpa or show him to be a total fucking idiot.
And by the way, just to underscore like how crazy this is, I mean, Russia, this is a country where people are being arrested for holding up blank signs.
And here comes Prigozhin with an army and says, he goes after dedushka and he calls him a mudak. And mudak is a Russian word that means somebody who's both hapless and an idiot, but also kind of an asshole and a dickhead.
How's this guy still alive?
Well, it's a good question. In fact, I sent you a meme before we started recording.
You did.
It's, you know, it's that classic meme format where you have a guy and a girl in bed turned away from each other. And the guy is saying, should I get her a new dress? And the girl is thinking, who's behind Prigozhin and when is he going to get fucking whacked?
And this is going around in like Russian Telegram channels.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what everybody's wondering, you know, because how does he get away with it? How does he get away with the things that we learned about in the Washington Post this week, for example? We learned that one of the documents in the Discord leak was about how Prigozhin reaches out to the Ukrainian intelligence services. And at one point, he even said to the Ukrainians, look, if you let me take Bakhmut, if you just withdraw your forces and let me take it, I will reveal to you Russian military positions in Ukraine that you can then fire on. The Ukrainians didn't take him up on that, obviously don't trust him, and I think with good reason. It created a stir because it showed people that, yet again, that he is not operating with the interests of the Russian motherland at heart, let's just say, but that he is operating for the sake of his own ambition. And this has been the question for months now. Is he a real threat to Putin, or is he Putin's kind of junkyard dog to scare the elites? These days, it's starting to look more like the former, although it's hard to say.
All right, Julia, we've got to go to break. But when we get back, I want to talk to you about another national security crisis a little bit closer to home.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast. You hear that? Your dog knows. Spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Hey, Julia, welcome back. So we have an ambassador to Ukraine, but actually around a fifth of all the American ambassador posts are still unfilled, which is totally insane when you consider how important that particular job is to the whole diplomatic and national security apparatus of this country. How unusual is that? Like, is that a sort of recent Trump and post-Trump era phenomenon, holding up nominations for political reasons?
Well, holding up nominations for political reasons is a very old story, but it has taken on new proportions and new significance during this administration because Trump wrecked the State Department and didn't take this very seriously. And he also had a very high proportion of political appointees, like donors and friends, whatever, appointed to very important ambassadorial roles. So there's a lot of damage to fix, one. And two, in the first 2 years of the Biden presidency, the Senate, which has to vet all these nominees, was split 50-50. And so they were constantly deadlocked, right? And it gave each individual senator a lot of power to ask for things. It's like everybody was their own little Joe Manchin on this committee. So let's say you have an important ambassadorial post that needs to be filled. And knowing this, a senator on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee from the opposite party says, oh, well, I really need X. I really need, for example, this actually happened. I really need a visa for my friend. It's like, what? How is this relevant, right? And so there's just an unprecedented amount of hostage taking that has happened. And the other thing is that a lot of female nominees from the Biden administration ended up getting stuck. There are now 14 nominees who are stalled on the Senate floor, and every single one of them is a woman. And the third thing is that the Biden administration was really slow to nominate people. They really wanted to go overboard and vet these nominees as thoroughly as possible to kind of show how unlike Trump they had been. For example, it was only last week that Biden named an ambassador to Italy, which is nuts because Italy is a G7 country and the Italians are very upset. We're very insulted that they had to deal with a deputy chief of mission, a DCM, basically like, you know, an acting ambassador instead of the ambassador themselves. And it did damage to our relationship with an important ally.
You see a real pattern in the kinds of nominees who are getting rejected or stuck in confirmation purgatory. Talk to me a little bit more about what you're hearing from people inside the Senate about why that's actually happening.
Well, the Republicans didn't really want to talk to me, but the Democrats and people at state and people involved in this nominations process have told me that basically a few things are happening, especially when the committee was split 50-50 and any one Republican senator could get all his or her, his colleagues in a line. But it was a committee that had only one female senator until January. And a lot of the women going through were either grilled on abortion, even if it wasn't relevant to their office, because the assumption, I guess, on the Republican side is that if you're a woman and a Democrat, you must be an abortionist, and let's make you controversial for that reason, even if your ambassadorship has nothing to do with abortion.
Right.
So that was one issue. Another issue was tweets, as we've seen with the case of Neera Tanden earlier in the Biden administration. So after we saw Trump and his ambassadors like Rick Grenell tweeting crazy shit for 4 years, suddenly Republicans on the committee had real trouble with tweets that nominees had sent, especially if they were about Republicans on the committee. That apparently was disqualifying to serve in an ambassadorial role at a senior job at state. If you had tweeted negatively about any of the Republican senators on the committee. And for example, this became an issue with Deborah Lipstadt, who's a renowned Holocaust scholar, who was appointed by Biden to be his envoy for combating anti-Semitism. And she had called out Ron Johnson for white supremacy when he said to a radio station shortly after January 6th, he said, "No, I wasn't scared. I only would have been scared or worried if the protesters were Black Lives Matter protesters."
Wow.
Right, exactly. Wow. And Deborah Lipstadt was like, "That is racist. That is white supremacy, white nationalism in a nutshell." And Ron Johnson happens to be on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And when Deborah Lipstadt came before that committee, he was like, "Huh, you tweeted something mean about me, and you called me a racist. So we're going to need additional vetting," and was able to hold her up for 6 months. There was another nominee that was held for almost 2 years because of a tweet about the BDS movement. And she was asked in private meetings with Republicans on the committee, "Do you support BDS?" And she said, "No, I don't support BDS." And that was it. She was flagged for her quote unquote tone, and she never made it out of the committee. You know, these are not things that happen to male nominees, right? They're not flagged for tone.
Yeah, it does seem like there's this clear undercurrent of sexism with some of this. And it's also evidence of just how petty a lot of politics has become. I mean, you also mentioned the other day that there are hundreds of Pentagon nominations being held up. The military used to be this sort of untouchable arena mm-hmm. for politics. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe I'm being a little bit reductive here, but I mean, in the past, you wouldn't have seen that. Very, very critical roles that have been left unfilled throughout yep. the armed forces because they're being held hostage for political reasons.
Yeah, well, because Senator Tommy Tuberville, a former Alabama football coach, is holding them up, nearly 200 very crucial Pentagon nominees. And some of these are just promotions that they've earned, but they have to be run through at a certain level. They have to be run through the Senate. And he's holding them up because Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, signed a memorandum saying that the U.S. military would help women seeking to get reproductive care travel. And Tuberville said, "You know, we have this thing called the Hyde Amendment, right, in which no federal funds are allowed to be used for abortion. And this is in violation of the Hyde Amendment, even though Defense Secretary's memo said it has to comply with the Hyde Amendment." Anyway, he's holding them up over abortion. And he's also holding them up because of transgender people in sports. And the other thing that's crazy about Tuberville is recently, last week, he went on a local Alabama radio station and was asked about this. And he said, and another thing about the military, everybody's saying that we need to get white nationalists and white supremacists out of the military, but I just think they're Americans and we shouldn't be pushing them out of the military. So, you know, while the Republican Party is hammering the military for being too woke, you have Tuberville, who sits on the Senate Armed Services Committee, is blocking these nominations and defending the right of white nationalists to carry arms and wear our nation's uniform.
Yeah, well, I assume guys like Tuberville, they have a very clear idea of who they think should be in the military, what the military is supposed to be. I'm not defending his position at all. But, you know, I think a lot of Republicans now see the Pentagon and the military as a valid target for political attacks because it has adopted slightly more progressive politics, actually, around things like allowing openly gay or transgender members to serve or ensuring that women have access to reproductive health care. I mean, these are actually really important issues for a very, very large modern institution that has a recruiting problem. They want to attract young people who are more progressive, even people who are entering the military. And without those things, it really is going to become a sort of culturally ossified and more repressive institution. They're not going to be able to meet those quotas.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, one of the reasons we can't meet those quotas is because so many young people are being disqualified for obesity, for example, which is just such an American problem. And what's interesting about, you know, the dynamic you described is like so many things in the post-Trump era, the kind of alliances, allegiances have flipped. So before, Republicans were the ones always, you know, thanking our veterans and our troops and always trying to defend the military. Now it's Democrats who are like, this is perfect. What a perfect moment for us to talk about how we defend the military, how we're strong on the military, whereas it's Republicans who are attacking them. You know, just like post-Trump and post-Russiagate, suddenly Democrats love national security and they love the intelligence community, right? Which was really, let's just say, not the case, let's say, during the Bush years and even the Obama years. So it's just, I think, another way in which our politics have been flipped upside down in so many arenas.
Yeah, you're right. It's totally interesting how there's been this complete reversal there. Julia, we've got to leave it there for the day, but thanks so much for coming by. Always appreciate your insight.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of Puck. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only Puck can offer. Follow us on Twitter at Puck News. I'm Dylan Byers. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of Puck, and produced by Ben Landy, executive editor at Puck, and Bob Tabador.